Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel.
It's the Kid Double H, halfway trying to live, trying to exist.
We would do this podcast. We're supposed to do it on Tuesdays. You're supposed to hear it on Wednesdays. But, you know, it is what it is on Champions League weeks. So we just get it in guerrilla style with a U. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. If you're listening on Apple, subscribe. There's even a subscription feature that you can, you know, throw some change in the bucket if you're on Apple. If you're on Spotify, look up Talking Tactics Extra. You get some extra stuff. You can subscribe to our Patreon, all of that. Half Hope, where can people find you?
You can find me halfoffootballhot.com, but I'm remaking the website, which has been very, very, very annoying and a very hard task. So, yeah.
Oh.
Bro, I tell you, man, building it, it's fucking annoying, bro. It's been... trust me, just...
They aren't a sponsor, but, like, do you have, like, one of those, like, Squarespace?
Oh, no, I'm using...
Or is everything ground up?
Yeah, I'm using WordPress, because I'm trying to do this Patreon integration thing, so... Mm. And also, like, I'm good at it. I had, like, a nice price, because I'm a cheap dude, so...
Everything Havo does, there's, like, a deal attached.
What, bro, I told you, like... When I see red in like a department store, my brain just goes crazy. Like, you know, that's my addiction. Whenever I see red, half off, you know, everything.
That's the one thing we need, actually, that I would like to do. But I just have never got around to learning how to do it or wanting to do it in 6-7 years of this, is making a website for the pod. Just in case something happened. I don't know.
Bro, especially in this digital age we're in, it's always good just to have, it's like a hub. So when people say, oh yeah, so where's your Instagram, where's your TikTok website? Just go there. So everything you need, it's all there. So it's just good just to have like a nice hub where everything is all in one landing page there. So it's very useful to have.
One more commercial for Written in the Stars. Our Chelsea special will be dropping on November 20.
Okay.
It's going to be about Chelsea's 2012 Champions League victory.
So you have stuff for when you're gone then that will drop?
That first week. The second and third week, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah,
might have to figure something out.
Yeah. I'll figure out something. I'll get someone.
I think I might be able to record.
No. See, bro.
And I might be happy to record. I don't know yet. So we'll see.
Focus on the trip, man. You know,
we will play the pod by ear. I might not feature. I may. But yes, Chelsea, that special is dropping on the 20th. So it's a good one. It's better than the Zidane one, I think. And the Zidane one was pretty good. Half Hope is in it. Actually, you know, you feature quite a bit, even though our interview was like 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
But yours was the last one. So you plugged in. Wherever you hear Half Hope's voice is gaps that needed to be plugged in. Anyway, let's keep the Chelsea theme. Chelsea against Spurs. I feel like that's a good place to start. What are your recollections of the game that happened a few days ago?
I think I'll say my main recollections are Romero is a moron. Udogie is young. But I think there's only one discussion point here, which is very much to do with talking tag tactics, which is the idea of sticking to your philosophy.
Mm.
So nine men, a high line, and Ange was praised for his approach when he went down to nine men. And then I just thought that was stupid. And I feel like you shouldn't applaud that because you can't reinvent the wheel. Football is chess. And it's about the movement of pieces, creating space, trying to manipulate space. If a team has a one-man advantage, that is an advantage. A two-man advantage is a seismic change. It is a seismic change. So to literally keep attacking and play a highline with nine men, you are mad and you can't be applauded. So, and again, so this is, so it's almost like this, like the saying here, and it's like a quote, which is that I would rather be hated for the way that I win than champion for the way that I lose. Because you, at the end of the day, you lost, but people say, like, yeah, but we lost like warriors, you know, we really commend it. Cool, but you lost. And at the end of the day, this thing that we're doing here, it's about winning. You see, now here's something different. This isn't Cool Runnings. You see, for Cool Runnings, that was a whole different dynamic of what that was about, where, yeah, they lost, but that's what they achieved on a bigger scale based on just the context. You can say, okay, they ultimately won. But for this, no, it's Premier League, it's Tottenham, you were on a winning run. And here's the thing. You're going up against one of the worst attacking teams in the league. If you sat back, denied them space, you could have gotten a draw or maybe stolen a win. But then people say to me that, oh, but half up. It's worked though, because look at the chances they created. Let's take away the Son chance, where he shot with his left foot. Two of the chances came from a set piece. You can still get those same set piece chances if you play the men behind the ball by countering and winning a foul high up. Because my thing is that football, it's all about the psychology. If I'm on a team that has a two-man advantage, there is nothing that can change my mentality of desperation, of we have to score, we have to score, we have to push up. So by doing that, that counterattack is going to be on based on that team's desperation of like, we have to, it's an advantage. We have to be winning here. We have to be winning here. So the way you now sort of exploit that desperation is by, okay, come in, coax them in, coax them in. And then you then, because that counter is going to be on based on how desperate that team is to score because they feel they should be winning and they should be leading. Mm. So the nine-man highline thing, I'm sorry, it's stupid. But the last thing here, and this is where I think I know where people are going. Who are you as a club? Mm. If you're a club that aims to win trophies, that's unacceptable and that's a sackable offense. But if you're a club that isn't here to win trophies and is just here to have a philosophy no matter what, oh, Ange, well done, congrats. So for Tottenham, just accept that you're not to be taken seriously. You're not serious about winning trophies and you're just here about having a philosophy, which I think is actually the right thing to do for a team like Tottenham, then that's fair. Just let me know where we stand.
You know, I think situationally, it was determined by the situation. If Spurs were in a Champions League final, he doesn't do that. But because it was a league match against Chelsea, in a game where he probably felt, whether or not the decisions were correct or incorrect, Postecoglou probably felt that his team were hard done by. They weren't. It was a straight red on Romero, unquestionably. Maybe he felt like the two yellows on Udogie were soft or whatever the case may be. I think part of it was like a protest of like, I'm going to put this game into disrepute because we've already been disrespected. So who cares? And like, as I think as you alluded to, Chelsea had trouble breaking it down for like 30 minutes, 40 minutes. So it wasn't as if the tactic wasn't working. It was just you gave them too many chances for it to work. So part of me thinks maybe it was that it was just situational. If you put them in, I said Champions League final. If you put them in any final, Carling Cup, FA Cup, any final, I don't think he plays that high line with nine men. I think they sit deep. I think the players themselves in a final would be like, wait a minute, like we're just going to lose a trophy like this? No. But in a game against Chelsea in the league in the 11th, 12th, 13th game of the season, I think maybe it was just kind of not a protest, but just standing on principle. You know, I'm reminded of a quote from, I think, Kwame Nkrumah that says, one can compromise over, does he use the word program or tactic? One can compromise over program, but not over principle. Any compromise of principle is the same as an abandonment of it. I think that's the quote. I tried to memorize that one in college. Any compromise of principle is an abandonment of principle, essentially. So if you're a new manager, and which Ange is, and you're coming into a team and you have a little bit of hardship, and even before hardship, you're trying to establish this is how we play under every circumstance. It doesn't matter rain, sleet, snow, sunshine, whatever the case is, this is how my team plays. This is how I want you to play. And you're trying to bed this tactic, not even tactic, this philosophy or program or way of playing into a set of players. This is the first time Spurs have really met hardship. So what do you do? And I think this, we could use this for Manchester United later. I'll use them now. Ten Hag had this philosophy, if you remember the beginning of last season, right? And he came in, and I think they lost their first two games to Brentford and Brighton in ways where people were like, I don't think this guy's philosophy is working differently. Or I don't think this guy's philosophy is working. Then the third game was against Liverpool, and he completely switched it up, and they won the game, I believe. And then it was like, well, the principles that you showed in the first two games, even if over the long term they could have helped Manchester United play better or been more reflective of what you believe as a footballing mind, you compromised those principles in order to get points because you needed the points. And conversely, is this thing has been working. Why would I change it? Not only why would I change it, what does changing my philosophy do inside the minds of the players? And I think that has to be considered as well. It's that if we change, I'm showing these players that are new that my ideas change dependent on the situation. It might be too early in his process to change that idea. I need these players to know exactly what I want, no matter what. But then again, as I say, if it was actually a trophy on the line, I do think like he must change it, right?
Yeah, I get that in terms of I'm a new manager and I want the players to be married to a philosophy, but you have to respect what football is. So by doing that, you're actually disrespecting the intricacy of what football is about. Because again, as us who we know for football, it's an extremely tactical game. It's extremely tactical. And if you have a two-man disadvantage, that is a seismic change. So the game that you want to play, where you're not take two men away from that, it becomes impossible. Because now, every time you're now looking, because remember, your game is based off pass and move. But if you not take two people away, that same guy doesn't have the same. So it is impossible for you to employ your same philosophy if you now remove two, not just Ooh, one, two people
no,
from
no.
that.
No, see, there's a difference between tactics and philosophy. So the tactics can change, you know, and the tactics did change in that game. They had to, like, you can't play 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 when you don't have two players. So they went to like six at the back and then kind of two people doing whatever. Like, he changed the tactics, but he didn't change the principle or the philosophy. Because I feel like I don't know if he's capable of doing that because he is who he is. He said in the interview after the game, if we go down to four or five players, we're still gonna have a crack or something like
and
that.
And then you're an idiot.
But that is somebody who's so married to their philosophical idea that they're not willing to compromise their tactic.
And you're an idiot. With all due disrespect, you're an idiot,
bro. I kind of respect it.
I don't. I see. So now this is what we disagree. I have zero respect for that. You're being stupid. Because see, do you know what that is? Because then again, we now get into Disney Plus territory of like, man, no matter what, these guys, they'll always be married to the Plus VR. You know, that's something to be admired. For me, that's, you're a glorified loser then. That's what you are. You're essentially a glorified loser. Because,
go for it.
Because my thing is about, at the end of the day, what is it? Is it about winning or having a philosophy?
That's the thing. Okay. This is okay. Can I respond to your question with a question?
Okay.
Does sticking to their philosophy make winning not the game, but winning trophies more likely? So obviously, this game was sacrificed. But I think in Ange's mind, you can almost justify it by saying once you go down to nine men, there's no way we're going to win the game anyway. Even if it's Chelsea, even if we sit back with nine, I still think Chelsea would be able to find one goal. Maybe they wouldn't score three in the way that Jackson did, but they'd find one with nine men. So if we're already in a compromised position, why not embed the philosophy that should work over the long term, which is high press, high line, attacking football, or just aggressive football? Like, that could win a trophy even if it loses us the game. So like, you lose the battle, you win the war kind of idea. Do you think that could be a justification for it?
No. Because at the end of the day, you have nine men. And my thing, though, is where I disagree with you slightly is I think philosophy and tactics actually, in a way, go hand in hand. Because in order to enforce a philosophy, you need a tactic to enforce the philosophy. This is a proactive pass and move team. And if you're about passing and moving one touch, you need people in particular positions to be there in order to execute the whole pass and move, pass and move, pass and move, create space, pass and move, create space. If you take two men out of there, that guy that has the ball, you simply don't have those options. Because as you're looking up, those options you normally have just are not there. So it becomes hard for you to now employ that philosophy that you once had. Because again, I think, do you know what the issue is? We don't respect or we don't glorify defending. So growing up, defending was an art. So people like Desai, Cannavaro, you were like, man, Italy, this guy's defended, man. Wow, this guy, Maldini, boom. But now, defending is like a Desi word now. You know, defenders, they need to know how to play from the back. They need to be good on the ball. Look, give them praise if they score goals.
Goalkeepers are a perfect defense. People don't even want goalkeepers to save anymore.
No one wants keepers now. So
they want footballers who kind of wear gloves.
Like, yeah, there we go. There we go. So my thing, though, is that I feel what you should do is there's an art of attacking and there's an art in defending. Because if you look at 06 Italy and Lippi, those guys knew how to attack. They knew how to defend. So you look at that game against Australia when they went down to 10 men. That was a defensive counter-attacking masterclass when they went down to 10 men. And you look at the game against Germany, which for me is arguably the best football match I've ever seen. That was a great display in balance, but offensive attack chance creation. Now, granted, not everyone is balanced in that way. And people are like, no, this is what I have an expert in, and I have an expert in being offensive. But I just think that, basically, watching it, it looks stupid. I was like, this looks stupid. Because I'm like, I'm looking at nine men play super high level. So Charles like, okay, over the top.
You know, it took them 30 minutes to figure out how to break it, bro.
I know, but still, if you're a team as trash as Chelsea, as horrible as Chelsea offensively, if you give them 5 1v1s, they're not going to score. if you give them 20 or 40 1v1s, as bad as they are, they'll eventually score. So my thing is that it's like a numbers game. Let's restrict this bad attacking team from having as few good chances as possible. I'll even use like an NBA example. Like an amazing, like Steph Curry. The guy's amazing. Mm-hmm. If you don't put anyone on him, bro, even if you put someone on him, he's still going to score, but at least to make it hard for it. So put one guy, two men on him, he's still going to find a way and score, but Steph, okay, this is hard. If you put a nobody on me, bro, this is easy money. Or better yet, Westbrook.
Oh, shit.
So, like, but you see, this is different, though. So people would say that Chelsea is like Westbrook. Yeah, leave him open. But here's the difference. What is harder to score, a three-pointer or a 1v1? If you're Westbrook, not Steph Curry. So what's harder to score, a 1v1 or if you're Westbrook scoring a three?
Jackson finishing 1v1 or Westbrook making a three?
Come on, bro.
I'll go Jackson.
Yeah, come on. Of course, Jackson. Of course, 100%.
You know, he scored four of them, by the way. He scored four 1v1s. One of them didn't count because Sterling was offside by, I think, his elbow. So, you know, Jackson's finishing wasn't that bad. Just the header was pretty bad. And that last chance after the hat trick was pretty bad.
Nine men. I can't.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, he did have the ball in the net four times. I think there were... How many goals? So there were... It was 4-1. So it was five. Chelsea had two goals disallowed, and Spurs had one. So the game was crazy in and of itself.
I think Spurs had two.
Did they?
I think Son had one and Dyer had one, I think.
Yes. Yes, Son definitely had one. He was offside by his shoulder.
Yeah, and then so, Dyer had one, the free kick. Again. Yeah, the free kick. Yeah.
A crazy game. But yes, Jackson is more likely to score than Westbrook, I think.
Yeah, 100%. So it's like you just giving someone like Jackson, as bad as he is, several 1v1s, is the numbers don't work. Whereas like, if he sits back deep and be like, okay, break us down. I remember you have the speed of Kulusevski and Son, and you have the press resistance of Bissouma. You can get good counters.
Yeah, I hear you. I think your idea is you do what's necessary to win the game. Whatever that is, whatever it is, you do it to win the game. I think Postecoglou is taking or is looking. I said it right the first time. I think Postecoglou is taking a longer view, and he's thinking more about what he wants his team to look like in the long term, not necessarily doing what I have to do to win this game would compromise what I think is right for this team long term.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay. Let me quickly ask you a quick question. So, Real Madrid, Bayern, would that be acceptable? If he did that same thing with the nine men at Bayern or Real Madrid, would he still have the same view?
I don't think he would, if I'm honest with you.
I think most people,
and when I say people, I mean like, you know, people on the timeline, pundits on TV, they would show some level of respect. Like, even though it might be silly, I still respect the fact that you're going to die on your shield rather than, you know, do something that's not philosophically in line with or consistent with what you are as a manager. That's what I think would happen. Like, they would get blitzed. Like, eight. Like, if Chelsea can score four, then Madrid, or especially like Vinny and Modric, would be able to destroy that shit. Because if Gallagher, Sterling can destroy it, then give me Give me Modric. Or
no, no,
give
because
me
okay. So Bellingham imagine if so imagine if Di Matteo was a different kind of a manager, and after Terry got sent off, he decided to be like, no, we still maintain this high line. And then
VS Bolts would have maintained his high line for sure.
Yeah.
And they would have got destroyed.
Yes, and then Bas eventually you but then again, I think it's a point to me is that it's a useless. But see, it's a point to me to begin with. Tottenham. That's why my end that I came to was okay, actually I get it. Because it's Tottenham. Tottenham, this is what Tottenham should have always been. They should have always been philosophy merchants. They're not a good team. So the Conte and Mourinho route just was not what Tottenham was about. Because there was a key moment in the game. I think it was when Chelsea scored, it was either the third or the fourth, and Tottenham fans started to applaud. So I was like, wait a minute. Your rivals have just scored the third goal and you're applauding your team? But I was like, aha, I get it. They're like, we just want to see a team that we enjoy. And I'm like, you know what? That makes sense. So this is not a team that we take seriously in terms of, oh, they really want to win a trophy. It's vibes. And I think for Tottenham fans, and even knowing Tottenham fans, and speaking to Tottenham fans, I think this idea works well. This works well for Tottenham fans, so.
But it wouldn't fly at Madrid or
no,
Chelsea.
No way.
Anywhere where the fans have an expectation of winning and winning anyway.
Yeah.
So Chelsea would not vibe with this, which is, I think, the good contrast of like Chelsea fans observing what they did. Like, yo, we would never do that if you're in some, like, imagine Jose Mourinho or Antonio Conte or whomever, like, just playing a high line. No, if they went down to 10 men, Chelsea would sink deep and defend their space.
Oh,
much less
percent,
nine.
Bro.
By the way, the goalkeeper,
great.
Vicaro, amazing. The sweeper keeper thing. I mean,
yeah, he was amazing.
There were, in the first half, even when they were down to 10, I think, or yeah, after Romero red card. Colwell was trying to put Sterling in, and he swept like 2-3. And then in the second half, he was always there. So I would add this little piece, though. Chelsea struggling for 30, 40 minutes to score a goal against 9 to 10 dudes. It made them look worse, even though they won. It was like, yeah, eventually, Spurs, especially once you go down, like, when the game was 1-1, Spurs actually had something to hold on to, which made their defending a little bit more resolute. Once it got to 2-1, 3-1, they kind of gave up the ghost, especially after the Dyer goal and Son missed a chance that could have made it 2-2. Or was it 2-1? I think it was 2-2. Once they gave up the ghost, it was almost just Chelsea could do what they wanted and Jackson scored 2, I think, in the last 5 minutes or whatever it was. But for a large section of that game, Chelsea were not good, and it didn't seem as if they would score. So it's bad in terms of their attacking output. Chelsea do need an attacking philosophy, by the way. It can't be let the players figure it out, because we've seen clearly they can't figure it out. Even when it was down to 10 men, there was like a break in the action and Pochettino was telling Gallagher and Enzo, I think he was like, oh no, it was Mudrick, was it? It was Mudrick and like he was actually coaching them and telling them what to do. It's like, how do I say this nicely? Is there no intelligence in the team to know what you need to do?
Just into there.
If
like,
Spurs are playing a high line, then you need third, fourth man runs. Like, let Gallagher break the line. Let Enzo break the line. Somebody else needs to run. So the ball goes wide, third man run. And the third man is the one who would get the ball. And then you just need Jackson to stay in the middle and collect, you know, collect his penance, basically. Just like free goals. They were giving them free goals the whole game. Free! Free!
It was
Jackson could have scored 5 or 6 if they knew what they were doing. But it was took wild, them bro. Way no, no, too long. No, no,
basically, watching the game was wild. It was because basically it didn't. It wasn't a football match. Like when it went in, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm watching.
That's why that I respect Tottenham. If for nothing else, they've exposed Chelsea even further.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Anyway. Like, you see, yes, they have. Yes, like I'm like this. I've never seen a team win 4-1, but I'm like, man, this team has
this
issues.
Is bad.
Like how do you win 4-1? But the takeaway is like, man, this team really has issues, bro.
Because if a team is there, wow, if a team is there to get beat 10-1, and you beat them 4, you've underperformed. Jackson underperformed his XG.
His XG was like 7 point something.
Now, okay, this goes to our debate that we had on the Hangout. So, I want to know. Hell, hold on. Oh, wrong. Aha, marker created. That's fun, actually. In the month. Do we judge strikers by their counting numbers, or do we judge strikers based on their overall play? This is a question that I've had for a long time, and that we've gotten into on several occasions over the course of the pod, but I feel like Jackson in that game is a perfect example of what I'm getting at. And I tried, probably erroneously, to juxtapose him with Haaland in the sense of we judge Haaland based purely off counting numbers to the tune of he should be winning the Ballon d'Or over Messi because he has a bunch of numbers. But if you actually look at how he plays, his movement as a striker is good, but his link-up play, some of the bad touches he has, games where he doesn't even touch the ball except to score. Over the course of 90 minutes, he doesn't influence the game really, but he does influence it in the most important way, which is the little thing at the top left corner, right corner, wherever you're, you know, wherever Sky puts the thing. Is this top left?
Yeah,
where they put the score. Like, that's the most important thing. So he has the most important statistic, but he doesn't necessarily play well over the course of 90 minutes, 120, however long the game is. Jackson was like that against Spurs. He was awful. I can't say awful. He wasn't good.
Mm-mm.
I think that's safe to say. He wasn't good. But he did get the counting numbers. So I wonder, and it was a good game to have the conversation. If a striker gets numbers, even if they play trash, and obviously we take into account these numbers were got against 9 men, but we can forget that game and just go to the conversation more generally. If a striker has a good game but doesn't score, is that better than a striker that scores but has a bad game?
I mean, there are different ways you can view it because at the end of the day, in the modern game, you want more from your striker. Like, years before, mates, I'm not looking at you to play with the midfielders, combine with the guys. No, I'm looking at you to freaking score like Batistuta, Weah, Kluivert. You're just here to freaking score. Fast forward, Firmino, Benzema, David Villa. More is not required of the striker. Now,
Firmino and David Villa in the same list.
I mean, no, I'm just giving like...
I'm joking.
Yeah. I'm just like types of striker. But bro, give Firmino his just use though in terms of the role that he played for Liverpool.
He was good.
You know?
Good.
So more is required. But so I think now it's a bit skewed where the currency of a striker isn't just the goals, as has been seen with Firmino and that Liverpool team, where there were many games that Firmino did not score, but guys like, bro, Firmino was the most important player for Liverpool, and he was crucial in terms of the role that they are playing. And just how strikers are now used now. So remember, the games is constantly evolving, and how we now view different positions is constantly evolving, and what is required of those positions is evolving now. Like, bro, no one crosses the ball. No one cares about crossing. Now it's about you're now inside the four. So you're now you're pretty much a white striker now.
Mm.
So I think for Jackson, you can't, in a vacuum, you did your thing. You scored 3-3 goals in a vacuum, but then context is key. So why is it that every Chelsea fan I spoke to said that, man, Nico Jackson is trash? I'm like, wait, hang on. He scored 3 goals and nobody has come out and given Nico Jackson any credit. because you can't divorce it from what we saw. Because yes, you scored three goals, but it was a nine men playing a high line, and you missed several chances. So it is so. It was, so no, not a single person came out and gave Nico Jackson praise for scoring three goals, because they were like, "I'm sorry, based on that and that context, yeah, he scored three goals. He should have scored five or six, based on the psychotic tactics that were employed against freaking nine men." Whereas for Haaland's viewpoint is most of those goals where he doesn't really do much and he scores, it's 11 against 11. And also, fact is a fact, credit in the bank is a big thing. Based on his credit in the bank, you will give him a lot more leeway than anybody else. Based on like, oh, it's Haaland. And that reputation that you have means that, okay, you have a bad game, you don't score. Okay, you score one or two goals. Okay, fine, cool. But Nico Jackson, you have such bad credit in the bank based on how many bad games you have, how you're underperforming based on off of your XG, the chances that you're missing. You know, so. Mm.
So do you remember the game where Lukaku had like six or seven touches?
Mm.
If he would have scored a goal in that game, nobody would have brought up he had six or seven touches.
Yeah.
They would have just said he scored, he was good, because he got the number that matters. GA is what people focus on. So what I think my larger point is that for strikers that we think are good, it doesn't really matter what they do. If they score, it's good. But it doesn't matter. For strikers that it does, for strikers who we don't like or that we think are a bit suspect, even if they score, if their performance is bad over the course of 90 minutes, people will use that performance over the course of 90 minutes to say, yeah, he scored, but he was whack. But if we like you, even though you're trash over 90 minutes because you scored, you're good. I just,
If it was 11v11, if it was 11v11.
That's not the point.
That is the point, though.
No, like that's, it's, I feel like it's my fault because I'm not saying what I'm saying clearly enough, clearly. I would like a level of consistency in the way that we judge strikers. Either you use the performance, you use the goals, you use some combination of them to judge a striker, or let people have their own little, just their own customized way of judging individual strikers based off their opinion of them.
Okay. Can I ask you something real quick? So why do you think people didn't give Nico Jackson credits for scoring those three goals?
Because of Tottenham's tactics.
So how can you divorce the context of that? Because I 100% understand the larger points that you're making, which is that, no, be consistent. A striker's currency is his goals. No matter what he does over 90 minutes, if he scores two or three goals, he's had a good game because that's what he's about. So let's be consistent as we are with Haaland, as we are with everyone else, which is fair. But the fact of the matter is, why? Because this all stems from Nico Jackson isn't being given credits. They're saying, yeah, that's the worst hat-trick I've ever seen. I know he scored three goals, but that was a trash performance.
No, I never said give Jackson credit. I want a level of consistency when we judge strikers. That's all I'm saying.
No.
Jackson got his numbers. Therefore, people who use numbers only and they don't talk about people's performances, you now cannot bring up the tactical element. All you care about is number, not you specifically. Mm. But if all you do is talk about numbers, GA, I don't want to hear you talking about the tactical element and what Tottenham did. If a player got his numbers and that's all you ever use to judge a striker, then shut up about the tactics. If you're somebody like yourself, though, who uses the tactical element, who breaks down and has a different level of analysis over what happens within the context of 90 minutes, that then gives you permission to look at Spurs and their tactics. That then gives you permission to look at Haaland's performance over 90 minutes if he scores a goal, but he was ultimately kind of whack in the game. I don't have an issue with that. All I'm saying is there are people online who only care about a player's, not even a striker, but a player's counting numbers. He got goals, he got assists, therefore he's a Ballon d'Or winner, therefore he should be winning this, he should be winning that. I mark it down to the Golden Boot, Pichichi, Cristiano Messi-ism of what's happened to football in the last 10, 20 years, where all people care about is numbers and he scored 50 goals in a season, 100 goals in a season. If all you give a fuck about is numbers, if a man gets his numbers, I don't want to hear any excuses about how he got the numbers. He got the numbers. be consistent in your logic. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, look. I get where you're coming from.
But I 100% hear your point. It's a valid point. And I agree with the larger point that Jackson, like, he don't celebrate those goals. Do it. See, like, bro, the way you got them is whack. I agree. You know, there was actually something even interesting. Psychologically, I think he knew.
Of course he knew.
You notice he didn't go collect the match ball. Like, they had to give it to him. You noticed that, didn't you? Like, he didn't go to the referee and go collect the ball. Because I think psychologically, he took understand, private, like, this isn't a real hat trick, bro.
He knew.
If you're someone on Twitter who's talking about Haaland should win the Ballon d'Or and you ask why, because he got numbers, then when somebody gets numbers, don't start talking about performance over 90 minutes. I don't want to hear that from you. But that's all. My larger point was about consistency and logic.
But the last thing, though, is that that's why I didn't understand what you're bringing Haaland into, because Haaland's numbers is numbers on a wider context. This is just 3 goals in one game against nine men. So those guys that make the Haaland Ballon d'Or argument is 50-something goals. What 40 or something
it's
games?
It's based on numbers, though. It's not based on his performance in the games. It's based on he scores goals.
But he scores goals on a consistent basis. It's not just he scored 3 goals in one game. He scores goals on an extremely scary, freakish, consistent basis.
Yeah, but that's more down to the team than him.
Yeah, no. But whatever the case may be. 50 goals is 50-something goals. 5 goals in a UCL game is 5 goals in a UCL. So it's like, this is 38 games. So basically, it is a much, much more richer resume than Jackson's resume. So.
Yeah, hat tricks against Crystal Palace, Nottingham Forest, and Wolves last season.
5 goals against Leipzig in a UCL thing again.
You rate Leipzig now?
It's better than nine-man Spurs, bro.
I hear you.
Better than nine-man Spurs. Like, come on.
Haaland is the name on the top of my mind because he's the most obvious person that I think, my personal opinion, is a wretched footballer, but scores goals.
For sure. Yeah.
So I'm using him, but it's a bad example, ultimately, because the volume of goals he scores and the level that he's scoring them in, whether it's, you know, Champions League. Even though if we look at the semi and the final, he didn't really do much. But that's probably because he's a wretched footballer.
He's a tree trunk. The guy's a tree trunk that just scores goals. All he is a goal scorer. He's a tree trunk.
You'll notice for my point, I'm not bringing up Harry Kane. Like, that would be silly because he has the numbers plus the performance over 90 minutes to where he's everything and it works. But whereas for people like Haaland, though, and because he was Ballon d'Or winner, I'll shut up here because I'm probably just digging myself a deeper hole. But I see people who use numbers clearly, and that's all they care about is if a striker scores, he was good. But then when Jackson gets his numbers, it's not good enough because of reasons. When I don't get those reasons when other people score, even if they score against 10 men, if their goals are penalties, they don't care. They're just goals. So that's all I'm saying. But I'm never going to get consistency on Twitter or YouTube comments. So it's a fruitless argument.
Have you been watching Obi Mikkel's podcast, the Obi-Wan podcast?
Obi-Wan?
Yes. Well, it's called like the Obi-Wan podcast. Yeah. Look, bro, that's what the first thing everyone said when his name first came. So, Obi-Wan.
What's going on?
So, obviously, he interviewed Terry. He interviewed Lampard.
Are they good interviews? Are they good? Like, are they hard-hitting or are they just kind of soft?
No. The Lampard one was really good. Because, you know, they really go behind the scenes of what's happened in Chelsea. I'm just like, there's... Like, it's really good having an insight into that 2012 game. And they have a really good insight into, like, Mourinho and just what Mourinho was about and everything. It's interesting. All right. But I'm really waiting for the Drogba one. Like, that's going to be really good.
Are they in studio? Like, are they in?
No. So him and his podcast guy are in, I think it's Doha or somewhere, like, in the studio. Then the other guy's like via the internet.
So that's all you had to offer the people. So Mikhail Obi's part. That's fine.
What else is there really?
Was there
any
Champions League stuff that happened that's worth discussing? PSG.
We always have to be very careful because a lot of these accounts are muted, like Transfer Daily, Deadline Daily, and all this crap. But the new thing now is PSG have decided not to sign. Real have decided not to sign Mbappe.
Oh, was that because of their statement?
I have no idea. I'm just looking online. So guys just sent me a DM. How far have you read this? But then I look at where it's from. Like, okay, look, until you give me multiple accounts, I don't care. But the thing though is that I have a very sneaky feeling. I have a very sneaky, messed up feeling that Mbappe extends with PSG.
Me too.
I've got this sticky feeling that happens. That's because I believe that, and this is how I think it's going to play out. Mbappe is already a World Cup goat. He's already one of the greatest World Cup players ever. Like, in my view, he has had the best first two World Cups of any player in history. But I think that his club career is going to suffer. And I think his biggest regret was not joining Real Madrid all those years ago. That is going to be his singular biggest regret. Was not joining Real Madrid when he had the chance. Because I feel with Jude Bellingham now, if they now spend 150 plus on Osimhen, I think Real Madrid are going to go in a whole different direction and he'll just extend with PSG.
It depends on his level of intent. Like, did you place the bookmark? Yeah, I did. If he really wants to leave, he'll leave. But he has to really, really want to leave. And I don't think he really, really wants to leave. I think if he left, I think he'd be fine. But I don't think he's going to push for the move in some strong way. So what I mean by that is if PSG come with a contract proposal that's commensurate, I do think he'll sign it. But it's not going to be like, how would I put it? I don't think it's Madrid or nothing else. I do think PSG have a chance to re-sign him. And for me, I look at how the team is set up, especially in that Milan game. You've got Kolo Muani, you've got Dembele. Like, they have players who I think he probably likes playing with and are only there because they like playing with him. I'm sure, like, as the star boy of PSG, he must have had an input on those signings over the summer. Like, bring me Dembele, bring me Kolo Muani. Or if not, they're just players who the club thinks Kylian likes them, so they're fine. I have the scary feeling too of him extending. And it's not that he can't become a legend of the game at PSG. I think his, as you say, his status goes beyond just the club game and what he does for France. He'll be their all-time leading scorer. There's a chance he could have 2 World Cups, maybe 3 more. I think France should easily win one of the next 3. And that'd give him 2 World Cups, and that would put him in rarefied air. There are paths for him to become a legend of the game outside of what he does for the club, for his club. But his path would be made so much easier if he left PSG for basically anywhere else in England or Spain. Because people actually care about those leagues. Or even if he went to Serie A, like if he somehow found his way to, I mean, this would never happen because they don't have the money, but Juve, Inter, AC Milan, like the how would you put it? The name brand recognition of those clubs, like it would be, he'd be fine in terms of his legacy because he'd win something. But when you're when you're with Paris, who, as we said for multiple times, our parents are older than PSG. This club has no history, tradition, really. their history starts with Ronaldinho and JJ Okocha, really, and George Weah in the 90s, yeah. Really? I mean, nobody really cares about that thing except those in Paris. And you're never going to win the Champions League. Certainly not with Dembele, Kolo Muani as your supporting cast. You had the Messi Neymar days. That didn't work. So I don't know how you're expecting more with less. So, oh, that was something I wanted to say. We can get out on this one. Watching that game, how bad of a problem was Neymar really? For years, people said Neymar's a problem, Neymar's a problem, Neymar's this, Neymar's that. The only problem with Neymar was his fitness. That's it. If Neymar could have stayed fit,
but that's a big problem. No, without Neymar, they do nothing. Like, Neymar was the only answer for them to win the UCL. So
I was watching the game and I was like, so one would rather have Dembele than Neymar? On what planet? Not this one. Maybe there's alternate universes where like Dembele actually knows what to do when he gets in the positions. But on this planet, in this reality, he doesn't. I'd rather have Neymar, even if he's broken. Like Messi was going to do what Messi does because he was going wherever. But did you see Verratti in the stands? During the game?
Oh, yeah. So bad.
Put him on the pitch. He needs to be playing. I know he's in Qatar or wherever he's at. But like, why isn't he in the team? They could use him. I mean, this PSG are unserious. It's the best way to describe them. I'll steal that from Tosin or scams, Nigerian scams. They're unserious. It's not a real club. Shout out to Neymar, man. Neymar got way too much blame for a situation that is beyond anyone's control. The only people who can control
it was partying with his sister in March every year, man. So.
Wouldn't you have hope? Not your sister, but like, wouldn't you party with Rafaela?
Yeah, let's see. Come on. Okay. I'll party, but not, you know, I'm saying.
Whatever happened to the Rafaela fan club that you had going for like a season or two?
Yeah, well, on the channel. She's still there, you know. She's still there, you know. But, you know, I've seen a few others that have taken my heart, you know. So.
All right, anyway, talking about this podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes, well. Let me plug some stuff. I'm at the end of the look. Half Hope, where can people find you?
To be confirmed, but you can find me around.
Follow where you follow. Links are in the description. Now we can get to it. Talking Tactics podcast. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always foosball.
Okay. Peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.